Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. You know, throughout my life, I have often encountered people who've come to me curious to know my thoughts about some alternative treatments for their illnesses. Treatments that others have claimed to have helped them, but certainly aren't what most would consider mainstream or possibly even realistically viable. And to be honest, despite my years spent in academia studying, researching, and training to be a psychologist, I am quite curious about alternative modes of healing and always am open to finding out more. So I'm truly excited for this show today because I know so little about the topic our guest is going to discuss with us. And so my curiosity is actually very piqued. I actually want to know more, find out more. And I was quite excited to connect with this guest because she not only has her own history with an eating disorder, but also has her own experience with one of those alternative treatments, clinical hypnotherapy. And what I love about her is that she's one of those people who I would have never imagined would be here talking about this treatment. She comes from a very scientific background where if something could not be researched and proven, then it had no validity. Bonnie Killip is a passionate and lavishly energetic biomedical scientist, dietitian, and clinical hypnotherapist and NLP practitioner. She assists people who are feeling stuck or living to less than they know they could be to gain a greater understanding of their minds and control over their lives, all while experiencing more freedom, ease, and joy. All right, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Christina.
All right, so you provide a really interesting treatment that I know a lot of people might kind of go, well, my goodness, I don't know if I would like to take this on. So I'm actually curious, would you mind sharing with us a little bit about how you even got started with this or your own experience with it just to begin with?
Yeah. So the treatment that I assume you're talking about is clinical hypnotherapy and also neuro-linguistic programming, which I guess both of those things are a little bit unusual. And I guess the reason why I myself got started with them and even learned about them in the beginning is because of my journey with attempting to recover from anorexia nervosa and finally giving hypnotherapy a shot. I had never even come up as a consideration prior to that in the 15 years that I had been trying to recover. It wasn't one of the therapies that was ever offered or promoted or even given as a, you know, a side glance of, hey, why don't you give this a crack? But I did in the end. After one of my discharges from hospital, I was given a newspaper clipping of a lady who had recovered from anorexia nervosa. And in that article, it mentioned that she'd seen a clinical hypnotherapist and a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner. And I didn't know what neuro-linguistic programming was at that time. So NLP is what people usually call it. And even that, I mean, I hadn't heard of that, but it's a bit more common now, maybe. Anyway, it mentioned that she'd gone and seen someone who practiced in both of those modalities. And through doing that, she had totally recovered eventually. You know, it does still take time, but got through her eating problem, which was the, you know, the same diagnosis as mine, anorexia nervosa, which probably up until that point, and particularly after that hospitalization experience, I did, I think I did have a lot of doubt that it was possible to actually recover, let alone fully recover. And I'm not sure that I mean, there must have been in hindsight, like a part of me that believed because I was continuing to attempt to do all these different therapies and modalities and things to recover. But if I, you know, if I think about it, it was more even that I wanted to show that I was attempting to recover. I don't think a lot of me believed that it was possible. So yeah, when I got in contact with her, she actually gave me the name of the hypnotherapist that she saw, and I went and saw the same person. And also I went to some recovery groups that this woman who I spoke about in the newspaper was running. So she was running little support recovery groups where, you know, men and women with eating disorders would come along and we'd kind of just talk and do things. And, you know, there was people in that also who had recovered, and they were also just involved in the group. And that, I think, was an experience that did really change things for me, is that I still remember on the first night that I went there, leaving that, and I just sat in my car and I just cried my eyes out, because I just had like this, you know, like these people who were there were so beautiful and so wonderful and such amazing human beings, and they just couldn't see it themselves at all. And I think that maybe was the beginning of sort of opening up to me. It makes me like teary.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. But I think it like opened up to me the possibility that maybe I was also an okay human being, and that maybe I also was, you know, behaving and acting in ways that were lower than what I was actually worth. Like, you know, maybe my belief that my self-worth was so low and that I wasn't good enough and all those sort of, I have to say it, like classic things that people with eating disorders believe about themselves. It opened up just that little bit of, I guess, doubt that if these people also thought that, when we're also doing these totally ridiculous, weird, bizarre things with food and their life, to be honest, it's not just food with an eating disorder, but it opened up that possibility to me that if they were doing this and also believed that they weren't worthy and weren't good enough and all of that, and I could so clearly see that they were worthy and they were good enough and they were deserving of a better life and treating themselves well, opened up the possibility for me that maybe I was also, you know, delusioned or misguided or had it some way wrong. And yeah, like I think those two in combination probably what started to maybe make little cracks in the definite and the rigidity and the certainty I had in the I was broken and I was wrong and I was unfixable and I was just, you know, like inherently this was the way that I was, and it was always going to be a battle and it was always going to be a fight to be anything outside of that. Because up until that point, I have to be honest, like my experience with recovery, you know, I would have said for those 15 years that I was in recovery, I never just referred to myself as having an eating disorder. I was always in recovery from an eating disorder. So I always thought of myself as actively and proactively trying to change things and trying to get over this. But my experience with what that meant to me, I suppose, was that I was always actively and trying my heart out to gain weight. And that was about it. Like my emotional state was so below capacity. Like thinking about it now, I was just so easily overwhelmed, so easily emotionally flooded, so unable to emotionally regulate. Someone able to, I guess, you know, feel like an adult human being, that I think to me it wasn't even possible really to be able to do any of that. Things that I tried like CBT and like that more conscious level talk therapy, that in my life now is super fun and super great and super useful and super wonderful, and I love therapy and I love those sorts of things. But at that time for me, with where I was so far below being able to use that more conscious, logical, rational, you know, prefrontal cortex part of my brain, that it, you know, those therapies and those modalities I don't think were ever going to work for me to get me to a level that was out of that, I guess. Stuckness. Yeah, just being stuck. So that's where, you know, clinical hypnotherapy works with more the unconscious part of our brain, is the term we use in hypnosis language, is unconscious mind. But it's quite different and distinct from, you know, how unconscious mind is often used in by like Freud and things like that. It's more referring to our autonomic nervous system, so all of the things that we do outside of our control, including our heartbeat, including our breathing, including how we eat. Most people, and really all people, are just eating and doing most of our behaviors unconsciously and automatically and habitually. We're not generally putting a lot of conscious thought or a lot of conscious effort into eating or why we're doing what we're doing. We're just doing it. So it helped me to be able to understand, you know, those processes that were going on behind the scenes in the background, and then be able to take that next step of what would I like to be happening instead.
So interesting, right? So you were considering, oh, this whole 15 years of I'm in recovery instead of I'm still sick, even though you just mentioned like you had just come out of the hospital right before you read that article. And so at what point did you consider I'm sick? Like, what did that look like?
So to be honest, I was definitely one of those people looking back. Like, there's a lot of insights and a lot of understandings you can have looking back. There's not a lot of insights and understanding. Well, there is, like, it wasn't as though I didn't have epiphanies and I didn't have insight and I didn't have understanding. I did, but I wasn't able to use it in any kind of proactive, long-term, you know, anything that stuck. So at what point did I consider myself sick? Honestly, only now that I'm better. Only now, looking back, I can go, holy crap. You know, I would be like, if I had those problems, if I had any of those problems I had back then, you know, like the low temperature, the low heart rate, the low weight, the, you know, all the heart problems that came with it, heart palpitations and all of those things. If I had any of that now, I'd be like, well, I'm taking the day off. I'm taking the month off. I'm taking the year off work. Like, I'd be telling everyone, you have to, like, leave me alone. Let me de-stress. Let me lie down. Let me do all these things. And I'd be doing it until I could get back to a level of health. But when I was going through all those things, you know, even that hospitalization experience that I'm talking about, that was even against my will. And I was so sick and so horrible. Like, there was a lot of me that wanted the help. I wanted the help, but I'd had hospitalization experiences and I knew that the help that I needed wasn't found there, but I didn't know where else to go. So I ended up back in hospital again and again and again and again. And I'd even go to doctors and GPs like myself, like I was doing it and I was proactive in it. But, you know, part of me always knew that this, I'd already tried this, I'd already done this. It wasn't really going to stop me or prevent me from ending up back in hospital. But I'd kind of go again because I knew within myself that, oh, like, I'm going to do this again. Like, I can feel it. I need help to stop, you know. But I'd go on to doctors. I'd get the blood tests. I'd get all the things that would show that, yeah, medically unstable, unwell, all of this. So it would be, you know, your choice is back in hospital. So I'd go back to hospital. And then after the hospital, well, now what? You're on your own. And there was no further plan. There was never like this discharge plan, continuous care. Here's what, you know, here's the areas that you probably need to work on to not come back to hospital. It was all very acute care. It was all very, we need you to stay alive in this moment and this here and now. And beyond that, there is a big gap. I don't know what it's like over there, but in Australia, there is quite a big gap between that medical admission and then what, you're back in the community, you're back in the same environment that your eating disorder thrives in, you know, you're straight back into all of that. And there is options, of course, out there, but as I said, they're not always the ones that are promoted, like the clinical living therapy, as I said, no one ever suggested that that could be an area that I could try. So we're often presented with, here, this is your next step, and it doesn't work. And then we're lost and floundering again because we then just don't believe in the system and we believe even less in ourselves and you're even more of a failure and you can't go back and ask for help again because, you know, then you're then you're a disaster. So it was like that for those 15 years for me, really. In that it was very acute fix-up care. It was, well, you just need to kind of eat now and get past this stage. And I would. I was very compliant. I was probably the best patient out there. I would eat now and put on the weight, and I would gain the weight, and I would be, you know, this fantastic magical BMI where everything was supposed to change and my brain was supposed to just flick a switch and turn back on, and I was going to be healed, and I was then going to be able to eat normally, live life normally. But that never actually happened. And this is most of the experience of the people that I work with. Mm-hmm. To a degree, yes, like it's undeniable. You know, I'm also a dietitian and nutritionist, so it is undeniable that that food and that weight gain really does help our brains. You know, a well-fed human being is always going to be able to do a lot more than a starving, malnourished human being. It's undeniable. But it doesn't do all of the work. And there is that kind of missing gap of how does someone transition from, hey, I have this brain that is probably now in a position to do this work. What is the work? What is this work I'm ready to do? How do I start? Where do I begin? And if we don't have those kind of clear steps, we find this in all the health problems and health issues, really, is that if we don't have those clear steps of this is what I do, we end up doing nothing because it's too overwhelming. There's too much conflicting information and advice and things out there. Which was why, you know, clinical hypnotherapy really brought it back to like kind of separating me from other human beings and from other, you know, paths that other people had taken, or from, because a lot of my recovery attempts had been very focused on other people, very focused on copying other people, very focused on reading information, very focused on just analyzing to the nth degree, trying to figure it out, trying to get it right in this exhausting way that, you know, clinical hypnotherapy was letting all of that go and actually feeling that sense of being able to let go, and that sense of freedom, and that sense of what if, and that sense of, I guess, curiosity and openness to the experience. Before I had the understanding and before I had the knowledge and getting that knowledge and understanding on the other side, versus trying to get all the knowledge and understanding before I had made the change and before I had done the things and then make the change. So it gave me the ability to have the experience and then to kind of decide, was it something I wanted to continue with? Was it something I wanted to keep? Was it worth it to me? So I know a lot of the time in the eating disorder recovery, like, when people really commit to recovery, and if they fully, you know, have that belief, as I said, like I didn't fully have that belief that it was possible, but if someone totally believed that it was possible that they could recover and that they could move into this awesome life and feel well and happy and connected within themselves, they would do it. We would all do it. But you don't know that. Like nobody knows that. Nobody really feels that that's true. And everyone in the world can be saying it's true. You know, every person who's recovering from an eating disorder, I don't think that there's anyone that says, well, it wasn't worth it and I wish that I stayed sick. Mm-hmm. I'm so bummed that I put that work into recovery.
So it's interesting.
That. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's interesting. A couple of things I want to kind of go back to. So you'd mentioned you were such a great patient, right? You were the best patient, right? Typical eating disorder patient, right? Like a perfectionist, right? And so you were following the meal plan. You were doing all that right. But I think that is a misperception too. Maybe, I don't know if you have that experience, but people think that's recovered. Like that's when it's over. That's when you are successful. That's when it's, you can move on with your life. It's like you're eating according to what you're supposed to. And the behavior, it's all just a behavior. And as long as that's done, then the eating disorder is gone, and it's not, right? That's just the tip of the iceberg, right? It's like just making sure you can stay alive and your biological being is being fed and not going to die. And there's so much more to it, right? Like you did that part great.
I did that part great. I've lost count of the amount of times I did that part great. Went straight back to, you know, went straight back to hospital. Few months, few years, whatever amount of time after.
Right. And so it sounds like something shifted though, like when you started the clinical hypnotherapy. I'm wondering what happens in clinical hypnotherapy that gets you to the point of going from like keeping your biological being alive and doing well with that to, okay, now there's a shift and now you go from relapsing and going back into hospital. to, okay, now I'm on my path to the eating disorder going away and I'm no longer ill and I'm recovered? Like, what happens actually?
Yeah. And it's so hard to pinpoint, isn't it? Because it's a journey and it's a process. I don't think there was a single, you know, session that I went along to and I was like, well, you know, walked out of there all better and fixed and cured. Honestly, I think my highest hopes when I went in there was like, if this person can somehow magically control my mind and make me want to eat, that would be my highest dream and goal. That was honestly what I thought, you know. Other than that, I didn't really believe in hypnosis. I was one of those people who was very sciencey background, biomedical scientist, dietitian, working in the hospitals, you know, did not believe in clinical hypnotherapy. Hadn't even heard of it, to be honest, but hypnosis, you know, I was like, well, that's a made-up thing. So I think what, as I said, like there was multiple things that actually led to it changing. And I think a lot of it was those progressions. Like I actually got the feedback in my outside world and I started to feel more secure within myself and started to, like some of the things, for example, are those things that we try and do and try and create logically and consciously. Like set boundaries. We all know setting boundaries is good. We all know living to our values is good. We all know all these things are good for us. But hypnosis really allowed me that here's how you actually do that. Here's how that would actually feel. Here's how that would actually fit in with your life. Here's how you could actually use that now to make your life better. So it kind of gives you the experience of healing having happened before that healing has actually happened. So it's kind of like a test drive of your life, which we don't really get to do in day-to-day life. We have to make decisions and we have to make choices and we don't know if that decision or choice is going to make our life better or worse. Particularly with an eating disorder, it feels like the eating will make your life worse. It feels that way. Even if consciously and logically you know it's not that way, it still feels that way. And that's, I guess, the distinction and for me a bit of the power. Well, most of the power of hypnosis and probably what makes it unique is it works with that feeling. It works with that side of us that feels different to what we know and what we think and the information that we have. It works with the feeling part of us so that we can start to feel in line with what we think and what we feel and what we know so that we don't just go, yeah, I know I'm a, you know, pretty decent human being. I've never actually tried to hurt anyone. I've never done anything particularly bad or wrong in my life. And yet I feel really unworthy. I feel as though I'm not worthy of a decent relationship. I feel as though I shouldn't speak in public. I feel as though I can't say no to anyone. I feel all these things. But I actually know that if I was giving advice to someone else in my position, I wouldn't be giving the advice that I'm doing in my life. So it really allowed me, and it does allow people to have an experience of how their life could be otherwise. Because even if, you know, if anyone listening to this thinks, you know, what is it that stands in the way of you simply taking good advice? What is it that stands in the way of a human being taking good advice? And it's that feeling part of us, really. It's what we feel about that advice. We can go, yeah, I know I should do this. I know I should do that. I know I should, whatever it is. I know I should eat healthy. I know I should take better care of myself. I know I should say no to that toxic person in my life. I know I should whatever. But we don't really do those things until we feel that it's okay to do those things.
The fear takes over, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, we just default back to what we've always done. We just default back to that habit. And if we don't default back to that habit, it feels really wrong and it feels really uncomfortable and it doesn't feel like us. Often when I have sessions with people, I'll say, well, who would you have to be the person who just eats normally? Who would you have to be the person who leaves that relationship? Who would you have to be the person who, you know, takes care of themselves? And they, you know, sometimes people are saying, well, I'd have to be a completely different person. I'd have to feel a completely different way is essentially what they're saying.
So is that, when you're describing, is that part of what you experienced when you went through clinical hypnotherapy yourself?
Yeah. So a lot of my life and a lot of my eating disorder was tied into pleasing other people. It was very tied into perfectionism and exceedingly high standards and all of that stuff, which didn't actually particularly make me probably succeed as high as I would have if I didn't do an eating disorder and if I didn't do all those things, interestingly enough. But that's where that intention is different to, you know, the actual behaviors. So with an eating disorder, you know, the intention of an eating disorder is positive. It is positive. What it's trying to achieve and what it's trying to do for us is positive. It's just not what's happening out there in reality, and it's just not what those behaviors are actually doing. They might be very momentarily decreasing our anxiety, making us feel a little less depressed, making us feel a little more connected or a little bit more in control, or whatever it may be that we're striving for at an unconscious level. We don't know that we're striving for these things most of the time. You know, you have to do a fair bit of work probably to get to the understanding that we are striving for, to meet these underlying, you know, human needs, in the same way that we have needs for water and food and air. We have needs for connection. We have needs for love. We have needs for growth. We have need for certainty. We have need for uncertainty. We have, you know, we have needs within us. So I completely went round in circle and off track again. And I don't know where that was, one was leading.
Yeah, but you speak the truth, right? I think that's what's missing with, you know, the eating disorder is we're coping and using food, right? Like, at least when I know when I had my eating disorder, I was, you know, using food and the behaviors and the rituals and the routines, and it was, you know, substituting for other things that were missing. And because I was engaged so much in the illness, I couldn't even fit those things in, right? I was connecting with food and exercise and the rituals, the routines, more so than people or anything else, even myself, right? So I think that's very true. And because what it really comes down to is, what is it you're really seeking? It's not really another hour at the gym or counting calories or doing any of that. It's something else. There's something deeper than that, something else that's hurting, right?
Yeah. And that's spot on. And you're right. That was in a nutshell what I was trying to say, that underlying intention is awesome and is positive. And once we can kind of recognize that, and I guess with, you know, with an eating disorder, there is a lot of that warrior mentality and that battle and that fight. And it's kind of, you know, it's, I don't know if I should say this, but it's even looked as probably as a positive thing or a bit of a martyr thing, that you're trying so hard and you're battling and you're awesome for trying so hard when it's so hard. And I think that takes away from, we're not actually battling within ourselves to recover from an eating disorder. It's more welcoming those parts of us to the conversation, welcoming those parts of us to the table and going, hey, look, what is it that you actually want from me? Because we find out that those parts are not actually horrible, massive monsters. They're usually little scared child parts of us who don't know how else to behave and how else to cope in the world. Because they just want to feel loved and they want to feel protected and they want to feel like they belong.
So I wonder if people listening might hear a clinical hypnotherapy and think, okay, that sounds scary. It sounds like someone's going to control my mind. They're going to put me out and I'm going to be completely at the whim of, like, say you, for instance, if you were their clinical hypnotherapist, like, what would you say to somebody who's like wondering about that or scared to even try it?
Yeah. First of all, I'd say I thought the same thing. Of course, I went in pretty, you know, part of me wanted to do it, but a part of me was also pretty reluctant because I didn't want to be under the control of someone else. Mm. I was a very controlling person. In hindsight, didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, I can see that, yeah, it was, you know, my eating disorder, as I said, was tied into trying to control things. And that control isn't a bad thing, but it's trying to control things that you can't control, things that are out of your control. That's just, you know, you're never going to have a happy and healthy life doing that. So probably the first thing that I would say and ask someone who does feel that way and does have a bit of that fear and hesitation or reluctance towards trying something like clinical hypnotherapy because they have an understanding or have a thought that it might be someone else is taking control of their mind or making them do things that they don't want to do. There's probably a few things that I'd say. The first one would be, you know, are you in control of your mind now? You know, with the eating disorder, are you in control? If you want to have, you know, and it's something that the example that you gave the other day actually about, you know, if you want to have a cake, piece of cake or a cookie now, could you? And look, most people with eating disorder could make themselves have that cake or have that cookie. But what's your first feeling when someone says that, or if someone offers you some piece of food? What's your first feeling that comes up? What's your first response to that? Is it just this immediate fear, panic? I want to chuck it on the floor and run. So that's what it was like for me. You know, I remember multiple mornings of, you know, post another hospital discharge, my mum would make me breakfast, or, you know, sometimes it would be my partner would make me breakfast, and I'd just want to smash it on the ground and run. But I could sit there and I could say thank you and I could smile and I could be wonderful and eat through it and talk through it. I could do that, but it never felt okay. It never felt good. So that's the thing about when I ask, are you in control? You know, if you're worried about someone else being in control of your mind, are you actually in control of your own mind now?
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, clinical hypnotherapy was probably the most respectful, empowering thing that I've ever learned in my entire life, in that it really taught me how to understand, first of all, how to understand how a human being works, not even how I work, but how a human being works. So kind of depersonalized it, made me a bit of the less of the weird one, that this is just how a mind works. And then secondly, it really did teach me exactly how my mind was working. And then the next step was, as I said in the beginning, like, well, how would you rather your mind work? What response would you rather when someone makes you this beautiful breakfast? What would you rather feel? Because I can tell you that I didn't want to feel panic, and I didn't want to feel like I wanted to punch them. I wanted to feel the way that I spoke and the way that I acted. I wanted to feel the way that, you know, I wanted to feel when I said thank you. I wanted to feel that I actually felt thank you, not that I'd rather, you know, as I said, punch them out. So that would be the first question, like, are you in control now? But also my second point that I have to make is, when I lived with an eating disorder, I was very caught up in other people, very caught up in, I thought everyone had eating disorders. I wanted to heal the world of eating disorders. It was very important to me. Now, honestly, and this might sound harsh, but I don't really care all that much if you change or if you don't change. It's not, you know, it's not on me. It's not my call to make. So I'm not here to make you do things you don't want to do. I'm not here to change your mind. I'm not here to be in control of your mind and make you do things that, you know, I want you to do but you don't want to do. I'm here to help you to do the things that you want to do. You know, my life is already, I have to say it, my life is freaking amazing and fantastic. And with where I am, I know that it can just get better and better and better and better. Of course, there is always hard things. Like, there is always going to be really tough things in my life. And I know that. And, you know, I've just been through one actually really tough, heartbreaking breakup. And there will always be those experiences in my life that are hard. But I know overall that I am capable of getting through those. I know overall that I have my own back. Because in the past, you know, if I had gone through a breakup, that would have been a hospital. That would have been 1-2 years out of my life where I was unable to do anything really and unable to get myself out of that. Now it's, you know, it still hurts now. It's been a month, a bit more. But I know that through all of that, I still looked after myself. I still had my back, and it wasn't a battle and it wasn't an effort with myself. It didn't always feel happy and enjoyable to do those things, but I still could do it. And I think that's a lot of the difference between an eating disorder, between living happy and healthy and well and experiencing hard things in your life. But either way, you're going to experience hard things in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have other ways of coping, and legitimate other ways of coping, not the run and not the gym or not the, you know, not anything other than being able to use your mind, I think, to get yourself out of that. Like, not all the distraction things. I think they're okay short term, but they're not a long term solution to just distract yourself with work or with a new dog or with a new partner or with, you know, these sorts of things. So, yeah, it's coming back to helping you to do the things that you want to do is really what hypnosis is in a nutshell. You know, but I guess there is, you know, hypnosis is one of those things that's not hugely regulated, to be honest. Like, there's governing bodies. I'm not sure of the names of them in America, but there's like two main ones in Australia. So in order to be a therapist licensed with those governing bodies, you do have to do those 40 hours of CBD a year, and you do have to do the twice a month what's it called, not mentorship but like supervision, and you do have to do all this behind the scenes stuff just as you do to be a psychologist and a psychiatrist and a dietitian and all of those other professions. So if you are looking for a clinical therapist, look for someone who's a part of those, so that they are, you know, practicing something that's credible, because it is, you know, it's a modality that I can see could have a lot of potential for maybe not going the best it could go if someone's just kind of given it a crack. But even then, I think it's better to have given it a go than to have not. But yeah, look for someone who has some credentials, and particularly, like, preferably someone who also has some kind of health background, who also has a, you know, secondary education in some kind of health field, like psychology, like, say, you know, psychiatry. There's lots of psychologists and psychiatrists who do clinical hypnotherapy, like someone who's a dietitian, occupational therapist, any of those things, nurse. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it speaks volumes that you are so scientifically minded, and this would not have been something you thought at all would be something you'd lean toward. And so, you know, from having your own experience and now providing it to help people, that does speak volumes. But I do agree with you. I think with whoever you find for treatment, making sure you find somebody that is, you know, up to speed on, you know, their training and is, you know, certified, and, you know, not just choosing anybody. And then that doesn't just speak for that, but just in general, I think that's wise words.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, that's also just the massive education background that I come from, is that's something that I always say and promote. But I also can't rule out and can't say that someone who doesn't have that massive education background wouldn't be awesome, you know, wouldn't do a great job, and you wouldn't get where you want to get. So I think it's really finding the person that listens to you, that goes, okay, what is it that you want? Like, that first session that I went along to with that clinical hypnotherapist that I'm talking about, she's, you know, I sat there and my mom came along, and my mom sat in the room with me, and I sat in the corner and could barely make eye contact. I was, you know, late 20s by then, but I was like a scared 5-year-old child. I was, I lost track because I was imagining that situation. And I sat down and she looked at me and she talked to me. And even though I was acting so strangely and so clearly bizarrely for a grown adult woman, she treated me like a grown adult woman. She treated me above where I felt I was. And she asked me, I remember her asking me, what is it that you want? And that's like it. That was one of those things, if we're going to talk about turning points, you know, people say there's turning points to recovery. That would be something that I would mark as a turning point, in that I don't remember anyone else ever having asked me, what is it that you want? I've gone into all the therapist rooms, I've gone into all the doctor's appointments to sit down as the person with anorexia nervosa, to be weighed and be measured and have my heart, you know, monitored, and the ECGs and the blood pressure and all of those things. And it was always just assumed that I wanted to be sick, I think. or it was maybe assumed that I wanted to recover, but it was never asked what I wanted. And I didn't even know that that was something that I wanted to be asked, because when she asked me that, I was like, whoa, flooded. I don't know what I want. I have no idea, don't know. And that's also common. So you don't have to know what it is that you want in order to change things. You really don't. It is honestly like that, those first steps. Like, what's that really nice quote about? You don't have to see the whole staircase, you just take the first step. Because a few years ago, you know, I couldn't have imagined where I would be a year from then. And a year from then, and where I am now, and 5 years from now, who knows? Like, you can't know, but you can do the best that you can do. And I think going back to, you know, how we were talking about the professionalism and the credentials and all of that, two of the people that neurolinguistic programming was modeled off, so NLP and also hypnosis, NLP. In particular, I was modeled off a man called Milton H. Erickson, who was a medical MD. He was a medical doctor, and he used hypnosis with his clients, patients, and another lady who was called Virginia Satir, who was a family therapist. And both of those modalities kind of, they used them to create NLP. They were like, well, these two therapists are getting really great results with their clients. What are they doing? And they were doing quite different things. But one of them was a medical doctor using clinical hypnotherapy. So I think I know the professionalism and the, you know, letters and things before our names gives us more credibility. But at the end of the day, it is finding what works for you. Because I know I was going down the path of trying this, that, and the other thing. And I gave things a really good shot. It wasn't like I was jumping left, right, and center. I would sometimes go and see the same therapist for a good 3 years, longer, same dietitian for a good 5 years, longer. And I was one of those people who's really stuck with things and really took things on board and really tried. I was always trying, but that was all I was ever doing. I was just trying. So I think it's finding something. When you find you start to have changes and you start to feel differently, you can't argue with that within yourself. You can't argue with your own experience. So if you're really not getting any changes or results or outcomes with someone maybe that you have been working with for 10 years and you feel as though, well, you can't leave that or you can't switch that up because you've come this far, I think, well, maybe even before you leave that, like, also try something else on the side, because you don't know what sort of therapies have come in or advanced since you've been doing that even. But it's finding the thing that actually legitimately is working for you, and that doesn't have to be the thing that worked for, you know, your sister, the thing that worked for this other person that you've read a book about or this other person on Instagram, because we all find different things work for us.
And I know we're just about at time, but I just kind of want to end there, because I think if anyone's listening, that is a great spot, because, you know, you're recovered, I'm recovered, and we went through such different paths to get there. And I know one of the biggest myths out there is you can't get to full recovery. And I know you had said earlier, you know, just in this recording here, like, just having that knowledge and that hope that you can recover is so important. And so anyone listening who maybe is 5, 10, even 15 or longer into treatment and just not seeing any results, knowing, you know what, no matter how long you've been at it, you can fully recover, and don't get discouraged. There will be something for you at some point if you keep at it, where you will, something will happen. But if you have that mindset of, I will always have this and full recovery is not possible, that is also powerful. And that has a lot of power in your mind. So, you know, just hearing what Bonnie's saying here with the, you know, it can happen, and holding on to that mindset of, you know, trying another avenue, or if something's not working, shift it up. That can help. So thank you for saying that. I really think that's just a great message. Now, if anyone does want to connect with you or find out more about all of what you're doing or more about clinical hypnotherapy, How can they find you?
So my website's Fueling Success, which is different spelling in America and Australia. So it's double L is my spelling here, which is how it's spelled, F-U-E-L-L-I-N-G, success.com. And they can email me also at bonniekiller@fuelingsuccess.com or Instagram, fueling_success. Okay. Yeah, those are the best places. The website's got a weekly blog that I put out, which is probably a good place to have a read of and see if any of it makes sense to you or connects to with you.
Awesome. And if anyone didn't get any of that down, do not worry. That'll be all in the show notes. So if you want to connect with her, just go to the website and all that information will be right there. So thank you so much. Really appreciate all this great information. So fascinating just to hear about a different modality we just never hear about. So thank you so much. And again, congratulations on your recovery. And you know, it's always great to hear from somebody who's been there and understands everything and is now in a space where, you know, you've passed all of the pain and now are in a, such a great spot in your life, like you said. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a nice chat. Yeah.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.